Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep experience in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity. The Inquiring Mind by Cyril Houle was written in 1961, but it's a foundational text that can still provide learning businesses with a better understanding of the motivations of the learners they aim to serve. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
In our learning business maturity model, marketing is one of the five fundamental domains learning businesses need to work on and in to mature and be successful.
To help you in understanding your market, we offer in this episode, number 419, the second part of our book report on The Inquiring Mind, a study of the adult who continues to learn by Cyril Houle.
In episode 418, we covered the first chapter of the book along with some background on Cyril Houle. That first chapter was called Two Educations. And in that chapter, Houle talks about three subgroups or categories of lifelong learners, the goal-oriented, the activity-oriented, and the learning-oriented. I'll let that suffice for the brief recap for this episode, but you'll find a link to that previous episode in the show notes for this episode at leadinglearning.com/episode419.
And so in this episode, we're going to look at the other two chapters in the book, and we'll repeat what we said this in the last episode. It's a modest volume. It's a slim book, and it's made up of these three chapters. And this second chapter is titled Step to the Music.
And that title comes from the opening epigraph of the chapter, which is from Thoreau. If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away. And I will say that, as a side note, The Inquiring Mind is chocked full of quotations from other books. Each of those three chapters starts with an epigraph that is the source of the chapter title. And I will say that all of the quotes, the use of those epigraphs, makes me heavily suspect that Houle was a learning-oriented, lifelong learner, because he does note that they tend to be avid readers.
I feel certain that he was. We noted in the last episode that we dedicated the episode to Cyril Houle and to David Houle, his son. I know David is also probably one of those, you know, learning-oriented, lifelong learners, somebody who seeks knowledge for the sake of knowledge, at least when it comes to kind of this understanding the world, understanding lifelong learning, those sorts of things. There are probably areas in which both of them are more goal-oriented or activity-oriented. We've talked about how that can switch up some. But in the whole, I think they are probably very learning-oriented.
And so in this chapter, Step to the Music, Cyril Houle digs into the motivations that define those three categories of learners and looks at how those learners tend to see both themselves and other lifelong learners. So the goal-oriented learners tend to feel pretty comfortable and confident in their approach because it tends to fit with our society and our economy, which tend to be pretty goal-oriented. So they tend to see the adult education as a way to solve problems or pursue particular interests. And so they really identify as going after some goal. And they also tend to attribute the same kinds of motives to other learners. So they think other learners are also out there trying to achieve some goal. And in fact, this group of goal-oriented, they tend to be fairly impatient with anybody who doesn't describe why they're learning as being related to a goal. They sort of don't get this idea of, oh, I'm just reading a book to read a book. Sort of like, why are you reading that book? What do you hope to do once you finish the book? They're very sort of application focused, very practical focused.
These are the people who email us and want to know what the agenda is, you know, for whatever it is that they were offering, because they're, I think, probably thinking about what are their goals and is this agenda going to help them meet their goals or not. So that's the goal-oriented group. And then there's the activity-oriented group. And that can be a little people may be a little less willing to own up to that, just depending on how they're thinking about activity and what seems safe or acceptable. Because, you know, I mean, in some cases, they may be seeking out sort of these learning activity type environments simply because they're lonely, or they're looking for friends, or looking for a spouse or significant other. It may not be the type of thing that everybody wants to sort of put out there. But, you know, for the most part, when they're asked directly about their motives, those activity-oriented people prefer to say things which, you know, when you take them at face value, would actually kind of put them in one of the other categories.
Well, I think it gets back to like kind of what our society, what our economy, you know, tends to value, right? It tends to understand, or it's okay to be going after something to achieve a goal. And so rather than saying, I'm going to this conference for companionship, or I'm going to this salsa class to find a spouse, it's much more about, you know, they'll say, oh, well, I'm trying to learn how to dance, which again, at face value would put them more in that goal-oriented category. But it's kind of comes down to whether or not it's safe for them to admit it. I think that also does apply to the check the box learners that we also talked about that can fall under this activity orientation. Even if that's all they're sort of there for is just to check the box and get whatever the certificate is at the end, they might not always feel comfortable saying that. They might sort of give lip service to having some goal or some appreciation for the particular subject matter and what it might help them do, but really they're there just to check the box.
Now, and I think that's why you hear a term like networking so often, because networking feels goal-oriented. It sounds very sort of pragmatic and business-like. It doesn't say, I'm going there just because I want the social atmosphere, basically, which I think your average person who values networking is looking for more than just social interaction, but networking makes it feel more goal-oriented, more practical.
So those are the first two categories. That third category of learning-oriented lifelong learners, Hull says that they have two distinct self-conceptions. So most have long been aware of their own preoccupation with learning. They can cite illustrations from their childhood to prove it, and they recognize that they are different from most other people in this respect. But a few of the learning-oriented insisted, this is again based on the 22 interviews that Hull and colleagues did, that they are not continuing learners at all, and that education is merely their way of having fun.
I love that portion of this group that's, yeah, it's just like, this is who they are, this is what they do, this is how they enjoy life, basically, and they aren't thinking of it as learning, even though clearly it's very oriented towards learning.
Well, and so in that bit that I just quoted, there is that phrase, they are different from most others in this respect, meaning their preoccupation with learning. And Hull really gives some emphasis to that and spends some time on it, because he argues that society is, by and large, anti-lifelong learning.
Anti-lifelong learning, indeed, yeah. He says that those who want to encourage the growth of continuing education, and this would, for example, be learning businesses, we're all presumably encouraging the growth of continuing education, must face the fact that many of the attitudes and values of American society are directly and specifically opposed to the idea of lifelong learning, and that this opposition has a vehemence and spread of impact which is not apparent to those who do not feel it directly themselves.
And he goes on to say, and I find this very interesting and important, the enemy is not apathy, as many would like to believe, but outright opposition, and opposition from places where it counts most, from the family, associates, and friends who surround the person who feels an inclination toward learning. I think this is very interesting because I think personally, I too often perhaps don't realize the bubble that I live within. And so I'm sort of thinking, well, who in the world could be against bettering yourself through lifelong learning or continuing education or professional development? But as Hull cites in these interviews, often for that adult who wants to pursue learning, that comes at the expense of time spent at home with family or time spent, you know, on the job directly. And so you have this sort of opposition that the lifelong learner has to grapple with. They have this innate desire or this goal-oriented desire or this activity-oriented desire to learn, but there are forces at work that make it hard for them to engage, and that opposition can come from very important sources, your colleagues, your family, sources that are hard to ignore.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always this sort of potentially a sense or a vibe there that somebody who's actively seeking learning is potentially trying to be better than other people in a way. It can be perceived that way. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to get into politics here, but, you know, I think there is, for example, right now in the United States, and I think this applies in other countries as well, there's a big divide between the educated and the less educated. And I think there is some of that tension that's there. It's a very real sort of current that runs through society and who was picking up on it at that point in time.
And so I think it's interesting for learning businesses to have perhaps acknowledge that, because again, as I said, if any listeners or learning businesses are like me and tend to think, oh, there's just sort of only the positive, you know, spin to be put on bettering yourself through continued learning, you might need to pause and think about what are the objections, what are the barriers that your learners might be encountering, and is there anything that you can do to help them combat those barriers that might be preventing them from engaging with your offerings?
Yeah, I mean, I think this comes up in a very clear way just around like budgeting decisions. Budgets for any sort of formal investment in education or learning, or even informal investments, I mean, people often have to fight for that money. It's often the first thing that gets cut when times get tough. And I think that does reflect a sort of attitude towards learning that, you know, we can get by as we are. And to further invest in our education and our learning, that's a nice to have, not a have to have. I think Hull would say it's a have to have, but, you know, he knows he's up against people who don't think that. At Tagoras, we partner with professional and trade associations, continuing education units, training firms, and other learning businesses to help them understand market realities and potential, to connect better with existing customers and find new ones, and to make smart investment decisions around product development and portfolio management. Drawing on our expertise in lifelong learning, market assessment, and strategy formulation, we can help you achieve greater reach, revenue, and impact. Learn more at tagoras.com/more.
So one of the other takeaways from this chapter, Step to the Music, that we'll touch on here is that Hull makes the point that not just learners, but also those providing the learning. So again, that means those of you listening to this, those of you working in learning businesses, that those providing the learning as well as the learners tend to have one of those three orientations to lifelong learning. So they tend to either be goal-oriented, activity-oriented, or learning-oriented. And so it's important to perhaps recognize your own tendency, your own bias, where you tend to think of, and make sure that you're not only thinking, if you're happening, for example, to be learning-oriented, not only thinking about, okay, how does this work for learning-oriented? You're also sort of taking off your blinders and thinking about, okay, how do we also serve the goal-oriented? How do we also serve the activity-oriented?
Yeah, and you referenced earlier, you know, feeling like maybe you're in a bubble at times, and so you don't recognize some of these points of tension, opposition that are there. And, you know, and Hull says, anyone who believes all adult education can be fitted into a single neat pattern is either hearing only the reverberations of his own ideas, basically, you know, in a bubble, navel-gazing maybe, or clinging to the uniformities of a day which is now past, the we've always done it that way sort of stuff. So right on at the time that he was writing this, right on now in terms of the issues that can come up and how we think about ourselves as providers of learning and education.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's giving these lectures in 1960. As a reminder, the book is based on a series of lectures. Then he collected them, wrote them down, and published them in 1961. But you think 1961, and here we are recording in 2024. And, you know, he's talking about how the field of adult education is complex, and there are, you know, competing theories and competing priorities in the field. Like,
it's completely relevant.
Could have written that, you know, about today for sure. So near the end of that chapter, at the end of the chapter, Hull writes this: what is needed is a more concerted effort by educators and such allies as they can enlist among the value establishers of our society to express the importance of continuing education as clearly and as universally as they can, so that the message finally penetrates to all those different clusters and groups of people who make up the public.
I love that phrase, value establishers, because that's essentially influencers now. You need your influencers to work with you. But again, both then and now, value at the heart of it.
Yeah. And so this passage also, for me, speaks to the value of seeing learning businesses as part of what we call the third sector. We have the K-12 sector, we have higher education, but then once you finish your formal education, you move into that third sector. But if we as learning businesses really recognize our role in that larger sector and that we have other folks who are working in that sector, then it begins to be believable that collectively we might actually be able to convey and convince others of the true importance of continuing education.
So that's chapter 2 that we've just covered, which is Step to the Music. So let's move on to the third chapter of this 3-chapter modest volume from Cyril Houle. And this one is A Cataract of Consequences.
And this epigraph, where the title comes from, has to do with medical diagnoses. And this is a little part of that epigraph. Most medical scientists seem completely oblivious or ignorant of the fact that results usually come from many causes, not one. We ought to use the why in the plural and ask, whys is the patient in coma, not why is the patient in coma?
I love that, the plural whys. And of course, what do you call it when two words sound alike like that?
Homonyms?
Homonym, I guess, yes. W-I-S-E and W-H-Y-S, whys and whys. I like the way that those correspond with each other.
And so then after that epigraph, Houle opens the chapter with this: of all the questions that can be asked about continuing learners, the most important is whys. Which again, I think, if you know, we came to this text saying that we think it can help learning businesses better understand their market. And I do believe that it can. And I think one of the important takeaways is that it's not a simplistic understanding of your market, that there are lots of nuances, there are lots of whys.
Yep. And so, you know, he then talks about 3 elements that are there for pretty much all lifelong learners that I think are driving those.
Basically, the sort of circumstances that need to exist for lifelong learners to be able to learn.
Right. I mean, so these are kind of driving those whys in a way. So there's the recognition of a need or an interest that has to be there, the will to do something about it, and the opportunity to do so. So you have to have those 3 things line up as sort of a commonality as the basis of all lifelong learning experiences.
Yeah. And so like that's the commonality. And that's what unites lifelong learners. But there's a lot of fragmentation. There's a lot of kind of, we've talked about noise. We've talked about fragmentation in other episodes before. And so Houle says, the organized field of adult education is now fragmented into groups built around institutions, processes, and special approaches. It can gain coherence and unified strength only on the basis of common themes, one of the most significant of which is the nature of the adult learner. So to my mind, that gets back to those 3 elements, that the adult learner who recognizes a need or interest has the will to do something about it and the opportunity to do so. That's the commonality. But then even once they have that, then that sort of array of choices, that fragmentation of where do I go to fulfill that need and to exercise this desire to learn, that is still kind of confusing and difficult for the lifelong learner.
And we've talked about this a lot before. I mean, that whole sort of arena of the third sector and the broader lifelong learning landscape, we have all of these different types of providers and institutions who are involved in serving adult learners. Not a lot of communication or collaboration amongst them, not a lot of coherence, and a learner is having to navigate that space. You know, so the learner may recognize that need or interest and have the will to do something about it, but then figuring out how to connect that with the right sorts of opportunities continues to be a very complex thing.
And then towards the end of this chapter, the 3rd chapter, which is the end of the book, essentially, there is a section on kind of the protocol for how they handled the interviews. But in terms of kind of the major content, this is the end. And he goes back to a concept that he opened with in the 1st chapter, which is that the ability and desire to learn aren't shared equally by everyone, that there are people who identify as being lifelong learners and there are others who kind of once they finish whatever education is sort of, quote, forced on them, they don't ever really think about wanting to engage in more. He closes, though, by saying that even though the desire and ability to learn aren't shared equally by everyone, both that desire and the ability to learn can be fostered by good teaching, by careful guidance, by building and enlarging sympathetic enclaves, and providing a range of educational opportunities. These tasks are too great for partial and divided efforts. The inquiring minds of the past have produced most of the advances of civilization. Our hopes for the future must rest in large measure on our capacity to increase the number and ability of those who continue all their lives to share in the benefits and pleasures of intellectual inquiry. So this is where I feel like you need to like cue the uplifting symphony music sort of at the end, you know, because you know, he's making the point that really lifelong learners, that's where most of society's major developments, major ideas, major inventions have come from. And so really what we're doing in this field, if you're supporting continuing education, professional development, lifelong learning, you're significantly contributing to society, to the future of society.
We've said it again and again, and probably even more than I recognize under the influence of Cyril Houle, we've probably been saying it, you know, but that coherence, that collaborative sort of vision across the many different institutions that serve lifelong learners, dialogue between the leaders of those different providers to the sector, the different institutions in the sector, governmental vision behind it. I mean, it's that other 50 years. This is a big thing. So many people impacted by this, society impacted by this. We need to step up in the way that Houle is suggesting here to really support this sector of education.
And I think if you buy into what he is saying here and into his belief in the just absolutely fundamental importance of lifelong learning, then that has dramatic impact on what you're doing as a learning business. It is going to say things about what should go into your portfolio, what might have the biggest impact. It's going to say things about partnerships and trying to look for ways to collaborate rather than compete. It's going to impact your vision and mission. It really could just lead to some radical rethinking of how you approach your market.
Definitely. Now, maybe a little bit of a down note to end on here is that this fascinating book that hopefully we now have you all lathered up to find and read is actually out of print at this point. You might be able to find a copy online or perhaps at a library. We hope libraries are carrying this. We're hoping maybe we can incentivize some publisher out there through our efforts here to put it back into publication. But, you know, while we do encourage you to read it, and again, it's under 100 pages if you can get your hands on it, we realize that's not necessarily going to be easy. So that's one of the reasons we wanted to at least offer this book report, because we do think it's a foundational text. It takes us back to the early days of the emerging field of adult education in the United States.
And so much does remain the same despite the 60 plus years since this book was published. The fragmentation of the adult education field, the societal animosity against lifelong learning. I think those parts also still kind of fit and feel accurate to me. I think the categorization of the learners into activity-oriented, goal-oriented, and learning-oriented, that also still rings true to me. And I think that is a useful way to think about learners that you might be serving.
Right. And of course, you know, there has been some change. There's been progress. We have much better understanding of things like motivations to learn, the underlying psychology around learning, the brain in general, and of course, how learning is now engaged in and delivered, what technology has made possible. All of that has happened, of course.
But I think the real takeaway is that applying this kind of inquiry to our own learning businesses is really beneficial. So we want to foster and support inquiry in our learners, but we should also live that out and do that same type of inquiry ourselves. It's going to help us better understand the learners that we serve, you know, and not simply as marketing personas that could potentially work for industry, but really as types of learners, really thinking about how our market thinks about learning. The Inquiring Mind by Cyril Houle was written in 1961, but it's a foundational text that can still provide learning businesses with a better understanding of the motivations of the learners they aim to serve.
At leadinglearning.com/episode419, you'll find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you haven't yet, please subscribe.
We'd be grateful if you would take a moment to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, especially if you enjoy the show. Jeff and I personally appreciate reviews and ratings, and they help the podcast show up when others search for content on leading a learning business.
And please spread the word about Leading Learning with other inquiring minds. You can do that in a one-on-one exchange, and you can do it through social media. In the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode419, you'll find links to connect with us on LinkedIn, X, and Facebook.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast. Thank you.